Welcome to the Adult Child of Dysfunction podcast, where we untangle the past, rewrite the present, and reclaim our future. I am your host, Tammy Vincent, and together we will break free from old patterns, heal wounds, and create new narratives. Are you ready to transform the effects of your dysfunctional past into your superpowers? Are you excited to get back in touch with your true, authentic self? If so, then hit subscribe and join me weekly on the Adult Child of Dysfunction podcast. Here we will learn from experts as well as experienced thrivers how to turn our trials into smiles while living our most authentic and joyful lives. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode. Today we have with us a special guest, Janelle Anderson. She is known as the speaking confidence coach for coaches and experts. She has 10 years in the coaching industry as a professional certified coach, a seven-time best-selling author and renowned speaker. She's on a mission to help her clients host virtual events and speak on other people's stages so they can build their prosperous, thriving businesses. Hello, Janelle. How are you today?
Hi, Tammy. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. So you know the name of the podcast. It's Adult Child of Dysfunction. Apparently you've been through some. So tell us a little bit more about your story. And I love that you're a speaking confidence coach because the world needs more of those. So tell us more about your story and kind of how you got where you are.
So I didn't start off being confident as a speaker at all. I used to be very terrified. You know, I grew up in a big family. We were Catholics. I went to Catholic school, standing in front of a classroom. I just wanted to disappear and let the floor swallow me up. But then as I went through college, some things began to happen. So I was already kind of more of a shy introvert, scared to death of speaking. Growing up in a big family, I didn't have a lot of confidence in my voice. I didn't feel like I was heard around the dinner table. I would end up talking to the wall because nobody would listen to me. It became a family joke. But internally, the message was that I was too boring. Who would want to listen to me? So that was already kind of in my subconscious, you know, programming. And then I went off to college and was actually drugged and raped and lost my virginity that way. And it was a situation where I thought it was my fault. I woke up in the middle of the night after having been out with my roommate. And the only thing I remembered that night was talking to some guys playing foosball. And then I wake up and I'm in my bed and this guy's on top of me and I can't figure out what's happening. I can't move. I blacked out. In the morning, I wake up and realize, oh my gosh, you know, I just lost my virginity to this stranger. Like, what kind of a person am I that I would let that happen? That was the first thought that came to me. So I was so ashamed of myself and I felt like I must be just worthless. I must not be attractive for a guy to do that to me, to see me that way, that, you know, because I saw the guy on campus a couple of days later and he walked right by me like I didn't exist. So I just felt like, gosh, I must just be this worthless piece of trash is the word that came to me. And I never talked to anybody about it because I felt so much shame over it. So I never got any help or counseling. I didn't even think of doing that because after all, it was my fault, you know? And so it wasn't until 30 plus years later when I finally did start dealing with all my trauma that I realized I'd actually been drugged and raped. That never entered my mind, not once. It was a shock. And I'm in this counseling session describing that night and the woman's like, sounds like you were drugged and raped. And I was like, what are you talking about? And that just amazes me that all those years, it never dawned on me. So I went home and Googled that, you know, what's that like? What are the symptoms of somebody who's been roofied, you know? And sure enough, as I'm reading through that list, I'm like, that's exactly how I remember that night. Oh my gosh, I was drugged and raped. It was that kind of epiphany, which actually was good because it helped me to start processing through all that and realizing the shame that I had taken on over that was not, I didn't need to carry that. It wasn't that I was a worthless piece of trash. It was that this guy took advantage of me. You know, I was traumatized. I was a victim and I was able to then, you know, forgive myself. Because I think that's one of the biggest things that, you know, we need to deal with is forgiving ourselves, because this is very common, you know, victims of sexual abuse or many kinds of trauma often feel like it's their fault. And so then we're ashamed of ourselves. But anyway, so I'm wearing this shame cloak as a 19-year-old. I start feeling this very desperate feeling of I want to be validated somehow. So I would, any guy that paid attention to me, I would just like latch on to that because I so desperately wanted to be validated that I was attractive, that I was desirable, that I was valuable, you know. But that just led to more relationships where I was used and taken advantage of. And so then by the time I was 23, when I met this guy, I was pretty, I was in a very vulnerable state. I always say I was in my trauma fog. I wasn't very aware. I was just kind of, I barely got through college. So I meet this guy, we start dating. He's very charming. Looking back, I realized he knew exactly what he was doing from the beginning. But at the time, I just thought, you know, this was a relationship. We leave Colorado where we were, and he asked me to drive with him to California, where his sisters lived, because he was going to move there. And I didn't have a job or anything, so I figured, why not? On the way there, he asked me if I wanted to stop in Las Vegas for a couple of days. So I'm like, sure, whatever. Well, a couple of days turned into a month, turned into several months. And he's like, well, we need to make money. You know, we ran out of money. So I went out and got a job. He didn't. He just kept telling me we needed money. And I'm working in a casino doing the change girl thing. I have the belt around my waist and working this really hard job. And I think I was a substitute teacher for a while. But anyway, while this was going on, he starts to talk to me about, well, you know, you're worth so much more than just minimum wage. You're so beautiful. And he starts taking me shopping and dressing me up and priming me this way. And next thing you know, he's asking me to go out and sell my body. I don't remember how he put it, but it was like made it sound like this wonderful, glorious, glamorous thing. And that I was so worth so much more that I could, you know, get all this money. And anyway, he asked me it in this way of, hey, do you love me? If you love me, you'll do this. And I was at this point where, you know, I'm very vulnerable. I'm desperate to hold on to any kind of attention or relationship. I'm miles and miles from home. My parents were in Virginia. We were in Las Vegas. I have nobody around, but it's just me and him. And I felt like I had to do this, or, you know, I don't know what I thought I'd be risking, but in my trauma fogged brain and very vulnerable emotional state, which he knew in, anyway, he talked me into it. And that's what I started doing. Even though everything inside me just screamed, no, I don't want to do this. And I hated it from the start. I hated myself for doing it. I felt like, you know, the shame just piled on. I felt so much more worthless and ashamed of myself for what I was doing. And this went on for 3 years. So from the time I was 23 to 26, and I remember times where I would escape into our spare bedroom and sew. I used to love to sew, and I would spend hours and hours in there sewing just to escape, just to feel like I was living some kind of a normal life, you know. And then sure enough, the evening would come around and he'd be like, you need to get out there. And so, you know, by the end of that 3 years, I was pretty much a shell of myself. I was very disconnected from my emotions. I felt like this is my life. I have ruined my life and this is it. There's no escaping this. This is my lot. And this is my lot in life. And I would think, how did I get here? I grew up in a good family with loving parents and they taught me good morals. And here I am, you know, how did this even happen? And during that whole time, never thought I was being trafficked. I always thought I'm just a terrible person for agreeing to be a prostitute for my boyfriend. No. Well, finally, one night, we got in a fight and he had me on the floor and was choking me. And I mean, the evil in his eyes was, I thought, this is it. He's going to kill me. And I actually felt like I was, you know, fainting or, you know, losing my air. And all of a sudden he stopped and ran out of the apartment, and I just was hysterical and so terrified. The only thought that I could think was call mom, you know, just call my mom. Now, my parents didn't have any idea what was happening to me. And I don't know what I said when I called her, but I do know I was hysterical and sobbing like a crazy woman. And I don't know what she thought when she picked up the phone, because it was probably like, it was 10 o'clock at night in Las Vegas. So I think there's 3 hours there difference. So it's like 1 a.m. and thankfully she was up. She was a night owl and she just happened to still be up. She picked up the phone. And I always tell people, like, I was rescued out of that with a phone call, a prayer, and two words. And the two words were home and peace. Cause she said to me, I just know Jesus wants you to come home to him and have peace. I was raised a Catholic and I felt like, how could he ever forgive me? How could God forgive me? How could anyone forgive me? You know, like, I'm a lost cause. But I knew that I wanted to feel at home again, and I wanted to have peace. Like, those two words were just water to my soul, like a magnet. Like, I want that. I don't care what I have to do to get it. I want that. So I agreed to pray with her. She led me through this prayer, just asking for forgiveness and asking God to come into my life. And she told me later, she said, I couldn't believe you were actually confessing your sins and all that, because I was a very hardened person by that point. I was, you wouldn't even recognize me. But anyway, so I said the prayer. And as soon as I got off the phone with my mom, I literally felt this physical presence of peace just engulf me. Mm. And I didn't understand it in my head. I just knew it was happening. And immediately I felt this sense of peace and also a strength that I knew I was going to be able to resist him and withstand him, and I wasn't going back out again. That was it. I was making my stand, and I all of a sudden had the courage to do that, and I did. And he tried everything he could to get me back out there, but it never did work. And I finally moved back home to Virginia and was rescued out of that life. But internally I was still, you know, ashamed and didn't tell anyone and just tried to hide it away and stuff it away. And so I was still struggling inside, and he still had a hold of me. He moved to Pennsylvania and he kept in touch with me, and I still felt like I was under this control of some kind. And about a year later, he talked me into marrying him. Mm. And the reason that I married him was, well, nobody else is ever going to want me. Who else is ever going to want me? I'm used up. Look at what I did. And if I want to get married, it's going to have to be him. And I remember my mom, like, trying to talk me out of it. Like, she didn't know still. I still hadn't told them, but she just knew it was bad. And she was like, you know, maybe you're just in this habit of being with him. You know, maybe you just need to, you know. But I remember listening to her, and I remember thinking, well, yeah, but who else is going to want me? Like, there was this resignation kind of thing, you know, and I went ahead and married him. Mm. And on our wedding night, I felt like, oh my gosh, what have I done? I've just made the worst mistake of my life. I don't want to be with him. It was the worst feeling. It was the worst feeling. Mm. Nobody should ever feel that on their wedding night. But we were married for another about six and a half years, and just continued narcissism and all that. Like, everything was always my fault. And it was just horrible. Emotional and mental abuse. He was not physically violent, but finally, at the end of that, in the middle of that, we had a daughter, and my daughter was, like, you know, the best gift ever. I think I would go through all that again just because of her. But he finally, there was a lot of mental illness, I think, happening in him, because he did weird things. And I didn't think of that until many years later, but at one point we were homeless, living in a hotel room, and he thought that, you know, God was just going to, like, drop money from the sky because we had given away all of our money instead of paying our bills, because he believed that God was going to pay him back 100-fold. This whole prosperity message thing was going around, and he sat there one day waiting for this money to drop out of the sky. I mean, literally. But anyway, by the end of that, I was growing. I was growing in my faith and growing as a Christian. And my strength, I think, and just who I am and my faith, like, was growing. And so it came to this point where he just left one night. He drained our savings account and left me and our 3-year-old daughter alone in this home. We were in Massachusetts at the time. and took off and said God was sending him places, you know. And at that moment, when I woke up that day and he had left a note or something, I was like, okay, that's it. I knew it. Like, this is it. I've given this as much time as I need to, and I'm free. I don't have to stay with this guy. And so I eventually moved back again to Virginia. We divorced. By that time, I was 26, 27, I guess. No, I was 30 because I was 26 when I was 27 when I married him. So by this time, I was 33. That's right. So if you look at that time span from the time that I was raped at 19 through all the stuff, I didn't even go into the stuff in between that and when I met him. But from there all the way to 33, it was just like one trauma after another, after another, after another. And by the time I got out of it, I didn't know who I was anymore.
Right.
You know? And so I did meet with my pastor a few times. Didn't really help a whole lot because I wasn't really telling him everything. And then I just thought, well, I'll just stuff this away. I'm not going to ever tell anybody about it because what would they think of me? And I just tried to live my life. And it was, like I said, it wasn't until I was in my late 50s that I finally just began to unpack all of that. And so for during that time, I was not very confident. I wasn't really able to speak up for myself. I wasn't able to, stand in my own power. I didn't know who I was. I was very, a people pleaser. I just go along with whatever anybody right. else wanted to do. And
many of the listeners can probably resonate with.
Yeah.
That are like, yeah, I've been there, done that.
Yeah. You kind of hide your true self because you don't
right.
really believe in yourself. And so, you know, my relationships were kind of on the shallow end. And I also
let me ask you, did you have a big aha moment? Like something hit you like a ton of bricks, like, okay, I want more, I want better. What was that moment?
Yes, I did have a moment. I had several of them, but I think there was two significant ones. One was sitting in church, my pastor's teaching about the path of destiny. And he draws this picture on a marker board of this path. And he says, you know, we've all been given a destiny by God. We've all been given a purpose. We've all been given, you know, strengths and things that, you know, he's put in us to fulfill that. And that's where we find the most fulfillment is doing what we were created to do. And I was 57 and at this point I was at that place, like, oh my gosh, like I think I was working just a job that was just a job. And I was feeling like, what am I doing? Like half my life's over. And what's the second half going to be like? Like that 57 years went fast. And that hit me like, it was kind of like alarm bells going off, like while he's talking, because he said, you know, you can follow the path, but you could also choose to be off the path. Just because you have a destiny doesn't mean you're going to fulfill it automatically. You have a part to play in this. And you can choose not to. And I remember sitting there like, oh, am I fulfilling my, you know, it was like, I don't want to get to the end of that path and look back over my life and realize that I never fulfilled it. Like that to me was like the worst thing that could ever happen. And right. It was like a wake up call, literally. Like I was like, I have to do something about this. And so I decided in that moment, I was going to find out what my destiny was from here on. And I was going to fulfill it no matter what. I was going to find out what it was and I will do whatever it takes. And I'm not going to just work a job. I'm going to do this thing. So that was the first one. And I began to really search, do a heart, you know, centered like search, like, what do you want me to do? What is it I'm called to do? And I started looking at different things, trying out different things and realizing, no, that's not it. No, that's not it. And I'm going to stick with it until I find it. Now, as I'm doing that searching, the other wake up moment was I had this, it wasn't a dream. It was more like a picture in my mind. And as I was praying, of a garden, clear picture of this garden and had a wall around it. And Jesus is walking around peeking over the wall and he finds a door and comes into this garden, sort of like the secret garden, you know, and the outer portion of the garden was beautiful. It was fruitful and fruit was growing on the trees. Everything was very lush and green. And he picks up a piece of fruit and eats it, and he's laughing, enjoying this garden. And then I notice, as I'm just kind of seeing this, he walks to a deeper part of the garden, and I realize, oh, that's like covered with thorns and thistles, and it's dark, and it's not fruitful. And he picks up some gardening tools, and he kind of looks at me like, can I go deeper? And I realized, I knew exactly what he was saying to me. It was like, yeah, the outer part is good. Like you know, you're living a good life here. Like you're a good person and you've done some work. There's some really great fruit here in your life. But now that I'm searching for my purpose and like, I really want to fulfill it. He's like, well, can we do some deeper work? So I knew that all was representing my heart and those places in my heart that I had not dealt with, that I had hidden away, and there needed to be some pruning there. And when I first saw that and realized that, I was like, ah, I know what you want me to do, and I don't want to do it. I don't want to talk about my past. I don't want to look at it. And it took me, from the moment I saw that, it took me another year before I actually said, yes, okay. And that's when I decided to go ahead and get some help, walk through all that stuff with, you know, my church has a ministry for that. And they really know how to do it. You know, they're not afraid of messiness and people sharing, being real. And it was a really safe place to actually talk through that stuff. And that's when I had the aha moment that I was drugged and raped. That was when I realized I'd actually been trafficked, and I was able to like pick all that apart, look at it instead of avoid it, and accept that this did happen. This was a part of my life, because up until then I acted like I just thought that's somebody else. It wasn't me. And so
right. It
was this disconnect, you know, with who I am. And so I was able to walk through that, kind of own my story. Like this all did happen and it was me, but it didn't define who I am and my value and my worth. And so I was able to walk through all that deeper healing of none of that was my identity.
Right.
I was never worthless. These things happened to me by these other people. And yeah, there were some choices I made, but I made them from this place of being very injured, right? And very deeply wounded. And so I was able to begin to see my younger self with different eyes. I used to be really ashamed. I have a picture over here on my bookshelf from that time that I could never look at without feeling like disgust. And my husband kept wanting me to put it out because he said, you're so pretty. And I'm like, ugh. But now, after I'd walked through all that, and then I could look at that picture and actually have compassion for that younger version of me and forgive myself and just love myself. And that just brought immense healing. So then at the end of all that, then I'm able to start talking about it and sharing the story and speaking up. And so that's when I started to really step into what I'm doing now, and helping other women with, you know, really becoming confident in who they are and seeing how wonderful they really are, and you know, peeling off all the layers of whatever is hiding their true self. And I finally wrote the book because it was like, the story has to be told. And
right.
So
what was the name of your first book?
The first one is It's Come Into My Garden. And this was like a self-published book. And it's a collection of my journaling with, you know, just being and talking to God, and that garden visions in here. And then Take Center Stage this is the book that I really go into my story. And I talk about the whole process I went through to be healed. And I call it the star process, because it's Take Center Stage, be the star of your own story.
And I love that, because I know you mentioned that was one of the things you wanted to talk about, and that's what you help people with. But I love that I love everything about your story, not the obviously what you had to go through, but the fact that there is purpose after your pain, and he does take you, and you don't know why. I remember the first time I kind of had that aha moment when I was called to do something, and I'm like, I don't want to write a book, even though everybody's always said, write a book. I'm like, I don't want to write a book. And I'm like, why am I writing this book anyway? And I remember it was kind of the same thing. He's like, you're writing the book so people, just so that you can say, I'm an author, so that you can do bigger things, because so that you have a message. And there's nothing more important, especially now with all the trauma and all the stuff that's going on with people, is for them to know that they do have a voice. I mean, it's so vitally important, because we do. When you're living in shame, it's debilitating. And you don't look people in the eye. You like you said, you lose who you are. You're afraid to talk about what you like, what you want to say, what you want to do. You literally just go through life. I want to say it's almost like you go through as a zombie, just doing, saying, and being everything everybody around you wants to be, because deep in your heart, you don't feel that what you want to be, if you even know what that is you're worth it. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely love what you do. So tell us more about what you do. Like, what do you, I know you speak, and you tell us more about what you do, because I know you're coaching and I love that. So talk to us.
Okay. Well, as I was searching for that purpose, that's what I landed on, was coaching. I realized after searching out different things, and was working at our local university, one of the things that you could do there is take the StrengthsFinder assessment, which I did. And then somebody coached me around it. And I love that kind of stuff anyway. I was a teacher for a long time, and I love the assessments and figuring out people's potential. And so after she coached me, I thought, oh, I could do this. This is really exciting. So then I started trying to get people, everybody I knew, family, friends, everybody, go take the StrengthsFinder and then meet with me. It just loved it. And I thought, well, maybe coaching is it. So that's where I really discovered that was an actual modality that you could make money. You could build a business around. So I became a certified coach, went through the training, started my business, and now almost 10 years, and have evolved a lot throughout the 10 years as a coach. I don't do a whole lot of one-on-one coaching anymore, although I definitely love to do that, but I've developed a program, a group program, and courses and things like that. So my focus used to be on women discovering who they really are and quit their day job to do what they really want, kind of thing. And I still have clients that come to me for that. But now my focus has shifted to coaches, because I've through the years, learning how to speak and learning how to run my own events and build my business that way, I've seen so many coaches whose businesses fail because they know how to coach, but they don't know how to get their clients. They don't know how to build their business around themselves. And then a lot of times they give up. So I thought, well, if I could help coaches to build a thriving, prosperous business, then they will be able to have the transformation with their clients that they were meant to have. And I could affect even more people by helping coaches, you know. So in the last couple of years, that's become my focus. And it really is about speaking, finding your voice, finding your message, and your story, your why story too. You know, like, I share my story because that's my why I do what I do in my journey of finding my own voice, dealing with my past things that were holding me back, and not being, shedding the shame stories basically, and stepping out there on center stage of my own life. I've seen the power of that, and how when you are in your center stage of your life and you're fulfilling your purpose, it's powerful. It has a powerful effect on other people, and also brings you a lot of fulfillment. So that's my story. So I help, you know, coaches and other experts really dig down into that, find their voice and their message, and then step out there and begin to speak it and share it with confidence. And then people will be drawn to you then, you know.
Yes. So I was going to say, when you're really fulfilling your purpose, you feel it. The people around you feel it, and they are drawn to you. They can't help but be, because they feel your passion, your energy. Just even like when you talk about it, like, I know if you were to walk by and I was holding your book, I know. And even if I didn't know you, it would be this, wow, I'm, that's why I'm here. That it was all worth it. It was all, it all got me to this place. And I just can't even imagine, like, a book, having 7 books or whatever, the impact it makes. And I just love it. I absolutely love it. So tell us, for the people that are out there that are listening that might be considering, you know, the first step, because it's that very first step of saying, okay, this actually happened to me. I mean, I know I tell people all the time, you have to name it. Like you said, yes. I remember the day that I finally said, I was trafficked. You know, I mean, just giving it a name sometimes is so powerful. And then you can understand and begin to go forward. But tell us, if someone came to you, what would be a first step for them?
Well, yeah, I mean, first of all, just like what you just said is so powerful, because when you keep it hidden away, that's the power that shame has. It keeps you hiding, right? It keeps you, if that's what shame does, it keeps you in hiding, and that gives it its power. As soon as you bring it out into the light and speak it, it loses that power, that hold over you, and it separates it from being who you are to just being this thing that happened. And so I don't know. I think the first, I mean, I'm just thinking about my own journey and how hard it was for me to do that initially, to actually talk about it. Sometimes you're just not ready. So I always tell people, like, I'm not saying to you that you should go out and shout it from the rooftops or write a book about it or tell the whole world like I tend to do now, but just tell someone. If you can find a trusted counselor, or, you know, maybe it's, it could be somebody in church, although some churches, you know, you have to really find the person you can trust that's not going to judge you or criticize you or whatever. And I know that was one of my biggest fears, was if I tell people, especially in church, if I tell people, they're going to be like, oh, how horrible. Because, I mean, honestly, in a lot of churches, I've been in a lot of churches, I've been a Christian for 44 years. In a lot of churches, there's a lot of judgment that goes on. Yeah. And people are afraid to be real and speak things out. But I was blessed to find this church that's what they do. And they hold that space, and they don't judge, and they really help you find your healing by being real. It's like, it, you know, those raw moments when somebody's really like confessing things and saying things that they never have told anyone else, like, that is hard to do. Yeah. So you have to find that person or that space, wherever it might be, to be able to say it out loud for the first time.
And honestly, I can remember, I've worked with people and they weren't ready. So it's like, okay, write it to yourself, write letters to yourself, write answers back to yourself. I mean, journal it out for a while until it becomes almost like muscle memory, that it's a story. Yeah. It's just a story now. I mean, you can put anybody in that situation. I'm just going to tell a story.
Yeah.
And yeah, it is a very hard step, and community is everything. And just, you're mm-hmm. right. Having someone that's going to save that space for you. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so maybe that's not even the first step, I guess. I mean, there's so many processes that go into this, you know, they say awareness, mm-hmm. and then you have to accept, and then you have to take action. I mean, I had so many aha moments throughout my life. I feel like I had a box of ahas, like, wake up, Tammy, like
lots of ahas for me.
How many do you need? But no, I love it.
Well, so, I feel like, you know, everybody's on their own journey with that, you know, and it's okay, you know, just to accept where you are now. I'd say there's a fine line, though, between hiding it and starting the process of dealing with it, because you can easily say, well, I'm not ready, and continue to hide. You know what I mean? Like, maybe that first step is just even recognizing that, oh, I actually do need to do something. That was for me, like, just even recognizing that actually I do need to do something about this.
Right. And getting on podcasts. I mean, go on. Oh, there's so many motivational podcasts and so many podcasts that lift you up and confidence building and, mm-hmm. and that answer all these questions. There's so many groups online that you can go to and just ask questions about just general concepts. But yeah, the more you listen to, and the more you learn, and the more you'll start to go, huh, maybe this is worth exploring, and maybe there is a better something, because you know when you're not 100% living your life out the way you want it to be. You know.
Yeah.
You know, it's just being exposed to someone asking the question, really.
Yeah. But that's true.
Yeah. But thank you so much. I absolutely loved you coming on. So we're going to have all the show notes and everything in there. I don't want to cut you off, but mm-hmm. we'll have all the show notes and all your links and everything in the show notes. But if people just want to reach out and they're thinking about a coaching business, or know they have a message and they want to share it with somebody and don't know where to begin, what's the best place to reach you?
Probably the best place to reach me is just email me, Janelle@emerginglifecoaching.com. I also have a website, emerginglifecoaching.com. And I have an app of the same name, Emerging Life Coaching. So if you go to the App Store and look it up, there's a little butterfly as the icon, and you can download my app and get in there. There's lots of resources in there. I have some videos and articles and courses, some having to do with just building confidence in who you are, and some having to do with building a coaching business. And you can become a member there and get notifications about new stuff. I'm always adding new stuff in there. So those two places are probably the best. Well, three.
Okay, perfect.
Site app.
Absolutely. And like I said, I will have those links in the show notes so people can jump down there and catch it up. Check it out.
Yeah, yeah.
And then if you had to leave people that are listening, knowing that they could be in any stage of their healing, what would be some advice you could give them or something to take away with today?
I think probably I would say the biggest aha moment was realizing that I actually, it was this issue of not really knowing my worth and value. Worth and value were at the root of everything. I did not see it. I didn't know how valuable I was, how much, I mean, we all know God loves us, you know, sort of like, yeah, God loves me. But I mean, he really, really, really does. And the value of each human being is so immense. Each one of us has been uniquely designed and created. And we need to see that and know that and own it. And we often feel like, oh, well, you know, I'm just everybody. How can that be? You know, I'm not all that great. I'm just an ordinary average person, but you're not. You're incredibly unique and valuable and amazing. And I just say, you know, to begin to open yourself up to actually believing that. You know, I remember the first time I was like, maybe if I just opened up my heart to actually consider that maybe this is true. And then just opening to that, then it began to just be poured into my heart. I was studying Psalm 139, 138, 139, that were about fearfully and wonderfully made. And I just was like, well, what if I really believed that?
Mm.
What if I am?
No, and it was another. You are.
Thank you. So are you.
Thank you. And thank you so much for coming on, Janelle.
Absolutely. I enjoyed it very much. And thanks for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. And for all of their listeners out there, another story of hope and healing, and know that you are so worth it. Like Janelle said, you are so divinely, amazingly created, and you just need to know it. You need to believe it in your heart. Thank you. Have a blessed day. Thanks so much for joining me today on the Adult Child of Dysfunction podcast. If this episode resonated with you, or you think someone else could benefit from what you heard, why not share it with someone you care about? Let's heal from our past and take back control of our lives together. If you're interested in learning more, head on over to www.tammyvincent.com for a free chapter of my book, Surviving Alcoholic Parents. While you're there, be sure to catch my invigorating seminar, Awakening Your Authentic Self. Together, we will rewrite our stories and turn trials into triumphant smiles. Until next time, keep embracing your strength, keep being you, and know that you are more than enough. You are way more than enough right here, right now.